You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled According to Luke. This is Lecture 5, entitled Contributions to the Nathan Jesus from Buddha and Zarathustra. Each of the great spiritual currents coursing through the human world has its own particular mission. These currents do not always appear singly. They are separated during certain epochs, but at other times they intersect and fructify each other in a great variety of ways. The event in Palestine in particular represents a great and mighty confluence of spiritual currents, and our task here is to call this event to mind with increasing clarity. World views, however, do not move as abstractly as we might imagine, passing through the air to unite in a point. They move through beings, through individualities. To appear in the first place, a world view must be carried by an individuality, and when spiritual currents mingle and fructify each other, something exceptional must take place in their carriers. The concrete meeting of the two great spiritual currents of Buddhism and Zoroastrianism in the event in Palestine, as described in yesterday's lecture, may have seemed very complex. If we only had to speak abstractly, rather than to deal with concrete events, we would only have to demonstrate how the two worldviews as such came together. As anthroposophists, however, we must leave the realm of the abstract and become increasingly concrete. And thus our task is to identify not only the content of such worldviews, but also the individualities who carry them. It should not surprise you that such a great and mighty event as the confluence of Buddhism and Zoroastrianism produced very complicated external situations and required slow, gradual preparation. As we saw, Buddhism pervaded the child described in the Luke Gospel, the son of Joseph and Mary of Nazareth, who were descended from the Nathanic branch of the house of David. Buddhism worked through this personality. In contrast, we saw the child Jesus described by the Matthew Gospel, the child of Joseph and Mary of Bethlehem, who were descended from the Solomonic branch of the house of David. This second boy, Jesus, received the I-being of Zarathustra, the founder of ancient Persian culture. Thus, at the beginning of our era, the Luke and Matthew Gospels described how the currents Buddhism and Zoroastrianism respectively manifested in actual individualities. The birth dates of the two boys did not coincide exactly. Today, of course, I will have to tell you something that you will not find in the Gospels. The Akashic record chronicles events whose effects and consequences are described in the Gospels, although the evangelists could not report the events themselves. You will understand the Gospel accounts better by learning what the Akashic record reveals about them. We must keep in mind that what John says at the end of his Gospel, that, quote, "the world itself could not contain the books that would be written," close quote, John 21:25, is true of all the Gospels. Christianity's revelations to humankind were not accomplished once and for all, written down and presented to the world in their entirety, in book form. There is truth in the saying, quote, "I am with you always, even unto the end of the world," close quote, Matthew 28:20. Christ is not dead. He is with us as a living being. If our spiritual eyes are open, we can always receive what he offers us. Christianity is a living spiritual current, and its revelations will endure as long as human beings are able to receive them. Today, therefore, I will mention certain facts that you will not find in the Gospels, although their consequences are described there. These facts can be checked against the facts of the physical world, which will confirm them. The births of the two Jesus children were separated by several months. Both the Jesus of the Luke Gospel and John the Baptist were born late enough to avoid the slaughter of the innocents in Bethlehem. Have you ever read about this slaughter and wondered how John survived? The Jesus of the Matthew Gospel was taken to Egypt by his parents, and John was born at the same time or slightly earlier, but is said to have remained in Palestine, where he should have died in Herod's murderous rampage. You see, matters like this require careful thought. If, in fact, all children under the age of 2 years were killed, John should have died too. The apparently contradictory accounts in the Gospels make sense once you become aware of the facts of the Akashic record. You realize that the events described in the Matthew and Luke Gospels did not happen at the same time, and that both John and the Nathanic Jesus were born after the slaughter of the innocents in Bethlehem. The difference in timing was only a matter of months, but it was enough to guarantee their survival. The hidden facts of the Akashic record will also help you understand the Jesus of the Matthew Gospel. The individuality we know as the Zarathustra of ancient Persian culture reincarnated in this boy. We know that Zarathustra gave the Persians the great religion of Ahura Mazda, the great sun being. We must imagine this sun being as the sole spiritual portion of the entity whose physical portion is the outer material sun. Zarathustra said, quote, "Behold not only the radiance of the physical sun, behold also the mighty being who bestows his benevolent spiritual effects on us, just as the physical sun gives us light and warmth." Close quote. To the Persians, Zarathustra proclaimed the existence of Ahura Mazda, who would later be called the Christ. In Zarathustra's time, this being did not yet walk the earth. Zarathustra could only point to the sun, saying, quote, "He lives there and is gradually approaching the earth. One day he will inhabit an earthly body." Close quote. Here we see the great and mighty difference between Zoroastrianism and Buddhism. As long as the two were separate, they were profoundly different. But the differences were eliminated when they coincided in and were rejuvenated by the event in Palestine. Let's look once more at the Buddha's gift to the world. We described the Buddha's eightfold path which human souls must follow in order to escape the negative effects of karma. The Buddha exemplified the qualities of compassion and love that human beings would gradually become able to develop on the basis of personal convictions and morality. I also told you that the moment the Bodhisattva being became the Buddha was a unique moment in human evolution. If the Bodhisattva had not appeared completely in the body of the great Gautama Buddha, individual human souls would not have been able to receive the lawfulness known as Dharma, which human beings develop from within only by eliminating the astral content of their souls in order to free themselves from all the harmful effects of karma. The Buddha legend points to this fact in a wonderful way when it says that the Buddha had succeeded in, quote, "setting the wheel of the law rolling," close quote. That is, when the Bodhisattva was enlightened and became the Buddha, a wave flowed over all of humankind, and as a consequence, individuals gradually learned to develop Dharma from within their own souls, and to accomplish the profound changes described in the Eightfold Path. Such was the task of this Bodhisattva. individual tasks are distributed among great individualities, and in the original Buddhism, we recognize the great ideal of personal individual soul experience. The Buddha preached the ideal of the human soul, of what the human being is and can become. But that one goal was enough for this individuality. Because Buddhism is concerned with inwardness and with individual human development, the real original Buddhism contains no cosmological teachings, although they were incorporated later in a very understandable attempt to provide an all-encompassing worldview. The Bodhisattva's actual mission, however, was to present the doctrine of the inwardness of each individual soul. In fact, in some sermons, the Buddha refused to comment on cosmic relationships. His teachings are all formulated to allow the human souls to receive them, His teachings are all formulated to allow the human souls who receive them to become better and better. The original Buddhism views the human being as an independent entity and disregards the great cosmic womb from which human beings emerged. The warm and inward effect of Buddhism, if correctly perceived, on the human soul is due to the specific nature of the Bodhisattva's mission, as is the warmth of feeling we experience in the rejuvenation of the Buddha's teachings in the Luke Gospel. The individuality who incarnated among the ancient Persians as Zarathustra had a very different, even opposite task. Zarathustra taught people to recognize an external divinity and to comprehend the great cosmos in spiritual terms. In contrast, the Buddha taught people to look inward and said that as human beings practice self-development, ignorance gradually gives way to the, quote, six organs, close quote, that is, to the five sense organs and manas. The broader world, however, gives birth to all aspects of the human being. We would not have light-sensitive eyes if the light had not given birth to eyes in the physical body. Goethe says that the eye, EYE, is created by and for light. This statement contains a profound truth. Light shaped the eyes from previously undifferentiated organs in the human body. Similarly, all the spiritual forces of the cosmos work to develop inner aspects of the human being. Every inner phenomenon, therefore, corresponds to an outer one. Forces present within the human being initially stream in from outside. Zarathustra's task was to draw attention to the outer phenomena that surround the human being. For example, Zarathustra talked about the six Amshaspans, or great guardian spirits. There are actually 12 of them, but the other six are hidden. The Amshaspans, whom Zarathustra described as the creators at work behind the human being, shape human organs from outside. Zarathustra identified the great guardian spirits, the creative forces outside us, while the Buddha identified the forces hidden within the human being. But Zarathustra also identified forces and beings subordinate to the Amshaspans, such as the 28 IZs, who work on human internal organs from outside. While the Buddha identified the actual thought substance from which thoughts ascend in the human soul, Zarathustra identified the Phravashis, the creative cosmic thoughts that are distributed throughout the world around us and reflected in human thoughts. Thus, Zarathustra's task was to proclaim a worldview that deciphered and analyzed the outer world, a worldview that would equip people to tackle and transform that world. Zarathustra's mission harmonizes completely with the unique character of the ancient Persians. We might also say that Zarathustra was entrusted with teaching people the strength and competence they needed for activity in the outer world, although some of the consequences may repel modern human beings. His mission was to imbue people with the strength, competence, and certainty needed for outer activity, to support them with the knowledge that they drew strength not only from their own inner nature, but also from resting in the womb of a divine spiritual world. His task was to make us realize that wherever we go, we are not alone. We inhabit a cosmos pervaded with spirit. We belong to the cosmic gods and spirits. We are born out of the spirit and rest in the spirit. With every breath we take, we inhale divine spirit. With each exhalation, we sacrifice to the great spirit. To correspond to his mission, Zarathustra's initiation had to be very different from that of the other great missionaries to humankind. Let's recall what the individuality who incarnated as Zarathustra was able to do. He achieved such a high level of development that he was also able to support Egyptian culture, which succeeded the culture of ancient Persia. Zarathustra had two pupils, the individuality who later reappeared as the Egyptian Hermes, and the one who later reappeared as Moses. When these two individualities reincarnated to continue their work on behalf of humankind, the astral body that Zarathustra had sacrificed was incorporated into Hermes. We must recognize that Zarathustra's astral body reincarnated in the Egyptian Hermes. To allow all the outer science that Zarathustra had absorbed to reappear in the material world, Moses received Zarathustra's ether body. Because everything that develops over time is linked to the ether body, Moses, when he became aware of the mysteries of his ether body, was able to awaken temporal processes in the great and mighty images we encounter in Genesis. Thus, the power of Zarathustra's individuality worked on, inaugurating and influencing both the Egyptian and the ancient Hebrew cultures. The I-being of such an individuality is also destined for further greatness. Zarathustra's I continued to incarnate in different personalities. Because a being who learns to give away its original astral and etheric bodies is always able to consecrate another astral body and strengthen another ether body. In ancient Chaldea, around 600 years before the beginning of our era, Zarathustra was reborn as Zarathos or Nazarathos, who became a teacher in the Chaldean Mystery Center and the teacher of Pythagoras. This personality achieved great and mighty insights into the outer world. If we immerse ourselves in Chaldean wisdom with true understanding, by applying anthroposophical rather than anthropological methods, we can sense the importance of what Zarathustra, in the personality of Zarathos, taught in the mystery schools of the ancient Chaldeans. Everything Zarathustra taught, all his gifts to the world, targeted the outer world and attempted to imbue it with order and harmony. Thus, social structures and the art of building and organizing empires in ways that supported human progress were also part of Zarathustra's mission. And it is true that his pupils were not only great magicians or great initiates, but also kings who understood the art of creating outer social structures and social order. The Chaldean mystery schools developed a great similarity to the individuality, not the personality, of Zarathustra. The wise men of the Orient felt related to their great leader and saw in him humankind's star, for Zoroaster means golden star or shining star. In him they saw the reflected glory of the sun itself. Their master's reappearance in Bethlehem could not remain hidden from their profound wisdom. Led by their star, they brought him outer tokens of the gifts he had given to human beings. The best that could be given to members of Zarathustra's school was knowledge of the outer world, of the secrets of the cosmos, which the astral body draws into human thinking, feeling, and willing. Zarathustra's students attempted to imbue their soul forces of thinking, feeling, and willing with wisdom drawn from the deepest foundations of the divine spiritual world. This wisdom was symbolized by gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold for thinking, frankincense for the piety that pervades our feeling, and myrrh for strength of will. The wise men's gifts confirmed their close connection to their master when they reappeared before him at his birth in Bethlehem. The writer of the Matthew Gospel accurately recounts how the wise men, influenced by Zarathustra, knew that he had reappeared in human form and expressed their relationship to him by offering him gold, frankincense, and myrrh as symbols of the best that he had given them. Matthew 2:11. In order to reappear in a rejuvenated form and give again all his gifts to humankind, Zarathustra needed to be able to work forcefully through the personality of the Jesus descended from the Solomonic branch of the house of David. This effort required Zarathustra to summon up all the forces he had ever possessed. For this reason, he could not incarnate into a body descended from a priestly branch of the house of David, but had to be born into the kingly line of descent. This is why the Matthew Gospel lists King Solomon rather than Nathan, the priest, as the ancestor of the child who was the reincarnation of Zarathustra. The ancient books of wisdom of the Near East have always pointed to these events. If we understand these books correctly, we read them differently from those who confuse the facts because they do not know what really happened. In the Old Testament, for example, a prophecy in the apocryphal book of Enoch predicts the appearance of a Nathanic Messiah descended from the priestly line, while another prophecy in Psalms predicts a Messiah of kingly lineage. All of the details in the scriptures coincide with the facts we learn from the Akashic record. At this point, Zarathustra had to summon up every single power he had ever possessed. But how was he to do so, since he had given the contents of his astral and ether bodies to the Egyptian and ancient Hebrew cultures, that is, to Hermes and Moses, respectively? He had to reunite himself with these forces, to retrieve them from Egypt, as it were. A profound mystery is revealed here. The Jesus of the Solomonic branch of the house of David, who is the reincarnation of Zarathustra, must and does go to Egypt, where he finds the forces that streamed out of the astral and etheric bodies that he once gave to Hermes and Moses. Because he had influenced the culture of Egypt, he had to retrieve the forces he had left there. The flight to Egypt occurred so that Zarathustra could reabsorb forces he needed in order to give humankind a rejuvenated form of what he had bestowed on human beings in the past. Thus we see that Matthew correctly describes the Jesus whose parents came from Bethlehem. Luke alone reports that the parents of his Jesus were from Nazareth, and that Jesus was born during their brief stay in Bethlehem to be taxed, after which they then returned to Nazareth. The Matthew Gospel says, simply, that Jesus was born in Bethlehem and had to be taken to Egypt. Only after returning from Egypt did his parents settle in Nazareth, to allow Jesus, the reincarnated Zarathustra, to grow up in close proximity to the other Buddhist current of Christianity. On a concrete level, the two worldviews were brought together, The Gospels show us the full depth of these events. When the Gospels were written, people who understood the mysteries of existence knew that human abilities closely associated with strength and will, with the kingly element, to use the word in a specialized sense, were transmitted through physical heredity by the paternal element, while everything related to the inner element, to wisdom and inner mobility of spirit, was transmitted by the maternal element. Goethe, who saw so deeply into the mysteries of existence, draws our attention to this connection, saying, quote, "From father I have stature, for the seriousness of life, from mother a happy nature, and a love for storytelling," close quote, a truth that you can often see confirmed. A person's stature, that is, everything expressed directly in the material figure of a human being, and, quote, "life's earnest conduct," close quote, which has to do with the character of the capital I, are inherited from the paternal element. Because his mission had always been to guide divine forces radiating through space into the human world, the Solomonic Jesus had to inherit his strength primarily from the paternal element. The writer of the Matthew Gospel expresses this fact in the greatest possible way. When the incarnation of this exceptional individuality is proclaimed as a significant event by the spiritual world, the announcement is received not by Mary, but by the child's father, Joseph, Matthew 1:20-21. We cannot dismiss this fact as coincidence, for this story conceals profound truths. In contrast, the Nathanic Jesus received inner attributes, which are transmitted through the maternal line of descent. So his birth had to be announced to his mother, as in the Annunciation described in the Luke Gospel, Luke 1:26-38. These facts are expressed in the Scriptures in very profound ways. Let's look at other similarly significant facts described in the Gospels. The first is the appearance of John the Baptist as the forerunner of Jesus of Nazareth. We will discuss the individuality of the Baptist in greater detail later. For the moment, let's simply consider the image he presents as he proclaims what is to come in the person of Jesus. With infinitely great strength, John summarizes everything contained in the law, the old revelation. The Baptist's message is observance of the law, respect for the old, mature aspect of culture that people have forgotten. To proclaim this message, the Baptist needed, above all, the strength of a soul born mature or over-mature. Here again, the Luke Gospel reveals a profound wisdom, Luke 1:18. To ensure that from the very beginning his astral body would be clean and free of all the forces that drag human beings down, John the Baptist was born to an elderly couple in whom desire and passion no longer played a role. The great Mother Lodge of humanity, where the great initiate Manu directs and guides processes in the spirit, looks after individuals such as John the Baptist, sending spiritual currents where they are needed. The incarnation of such an I, such as that of the Baptist, was directly guided by the Great Mother Lodge of humanity, the center of spiritual life on earth. The John I and the soul of the Luke Jesus both originated in this mystery center, although the qualities Jesus received were not yet pervaded by the egotistic I, that is, the being guided toward incarnation as the reborn Adam was a young soul. The reality of this situation, strange as it may seem, was that the Great Mother Lodge sent out a soul unaccompanied by an actual developed I. For the same I that was reserved for the Jesus of the Luke Gospel was bestowed on the body of John the Baptist, And these two elements, the soul being that lived in the Luke Jesus and the I that lived in the Baptist, were intimately related from the very beginning. When a human embryo develops in the mother's body, the I unites with the other members of the human constitution as early as the third week. Its effects are felt only gradually, however, in the last months before birth, when it is internalized as a force that provokes movement. Typically, an I that originated in earlier incarnations stimulates the fetus to move. John's I, however, was intimately related to the soul being of the Nathanic Jesus. That is why, as the Luke Gospel tells us, the mother of Jesus had to visit Elizabeth, John's mother, when the latter was in her sixth month of pregnancy. In this instance, the fruit of Mary's womb provided the stimulus to movement, normally supplied by the baby's own eye. Elizabeth's child began to move as the woman carrying the infant Jesus approached, because the Jesus child was, in fact, the eye that stimulated the other child to move. Luke 1:39-44. This indicates the deep connection between the being who merges the two spiritual currents and the one who proclaims his coming. As we see, the beginning of our era was marked by a great and exceptional event. Lazy people who prefer not to formulate many concepts would like the truth to be simple. To perceive the greatest truths, however, we need to exert our intellectual and spiritual powers to the utmost. Since even describing a machine requires considerable effort on our part, we have no right to expect the greatest truths to be the simplest. The truth is great and therefore complex, and we must exert our spiritual forces if we truly want to learn the truth about the event in Palestine. I am not making these issues unnecessarily complicated. I am simply describing them as they are. We are dealing with the greatest facts in the earth's evolution, and they cannot be simplified. So, the two Jesus children grew up in Nazareth. One, the son of the Nathanic Joseph and Mary, was born to a young mother. The Hebrews would have used the word Alma to describe her, because to function as a young soul, a being must be born to a very young mother. This boy lived with his parents after they returned to Nazareth from Bethlehem. They had no other children. His mother was allowed to devote herself entirely to the boy Jesus. Then there was the Jesus born to the Solomonic Joseph and Mary. After they returned from Egypt and settled in Nazareth, they had a number of other children whom the Mark Gospel lists: Simon, Judas, Joseph, Jacob, and two sisters, Mark 6:3. As the two Jesus children grew up, the child who carried the Zarathustra individuality matured extremely quickly and developed the forces needed when such a mighty individuality is active in a body. The individuality active in the body of the other Jesus was very different in character. Its most important aspect, of course, was the Buddha's Nirmanakaya, which had overshadowed the child since birth. That is why we are told that the boy, at the time when his parents returned from Jerusalem, was, quote, filled with wisdom, close quote, that is, wisdom pervaded his ether body, and that, quote, the favor of God was upon him, close quote, Luke 2:40. As he grew up, however, he was exceptionally slow to develop ordinary human qualities related to understanding the material world. Superficial people, considering only the forces needed to grasp the outer world, would have called this boy mildly retarded. In contrast, however, he cultivated what flowed down from the Buddha's Nirmanakaya, developing incomparable depths of inwardness and feeling that had an exceptionally strong effect on his entire surroundings. Thus we see that the Nathanic Jesus matured into a being of deep feeling, while the Solomonic Jesus became an individuality of great maturity and profound understanding. Words of great significance had been spoken to the mother of the Nathanic Jesus, the child of deep feeling. When Simeon met the newborn, illumined by an element Asita had not lived to see in the Buddha in India, he foretold the great and mighty events that would come to pass. But he also spoke great and significant words to the child's mother, quote, "And a sword shall pierce through your own soul also," close quote. Luke 2:35. Today we will also learn what these words meant. The two children grew up in the same vicinity, and their parents were friends. The Gospel reports that when the Nathanic Jesus approached his 12th year, his parents went to Jerusalem to observe the Passover festival, taking the boy with them, as was the custom when children came of age. The Luke Gospel gives an extremely mysterious account of what then happened to the 12-year-old Jesus in the temple. After leaving the festival and starting for home, his parents suddenly missed the boy, finding him nowhere among their traveling companions. They returned to Jerusalem and found him in the temple, surrounded by the great teachers, astonishing them all with his wisdom. Luke 2:41-50. What had happened? Let's ask the immortal Akashic Record. Facts of cosmic importance are not simple, but what happened in the temple has been known to occur elsewhere in a somewhat different fashion. At a certain stage of development, an individuality may require circumstances different from those provided at birth. In the occasional case, a person grows and develops up to a certain age and then suddenly falls down unconscious and appears to be dead. A transformation then occurs. The person's own eye departs and another eye occupies the body. Other cases of eye transfer have been reported. The phenomenon is known to every occultist. What happened to the 12-year-old Jesus was this. The Zarathustra, I being, having achieved the highest development possible at that time, in the body of the Jesus, descended from the kingly or Solomonic branch of the house of David, left that body and entered the Nathanic Jesus, who then appeared transformed. His parents did not recognize him and did not understand the words the Zarathustra I spoke from within the Nathanic Jesus. At the very moment when the Zarathustra I united with the Nathanic Jesus, the Buddha's Nirmanakaya also united with the boy's discarded maternal astral covering. The Zarathustra I now lived in the Nathanic Jesus, transforming him to such an extent that his parents could not understand the boy they took home with them. A short time later, the mother of the Nathanic Jesus died. We will see later that her death points to a particularly deep relationship. The other child, abandoned by the Zarathustra I, also could not survive for long under ordinary circumstances. The Solomonic Joseph had died earlier. So the Nathanic Joseph took the mother of the Solomonic Jesus into his house, along with her sons Jacob, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and her two daughters. The two families became one, and Zarathustra was once again surrounded by his birth family, with the exception of his father. His mother and siblings, as we can call them, since they were eye relatives, although not blood relatives, lived in the Nathanic Joseph's house with the Jesus, who was, at least in body, a native of Nazareth. These complicated family circumstances represent the concrete confluence of Buddhism and Zoroastrianism. A single body received the mature I-soul of Zarathustra and united it with the product of the merger of the Buddha's Nirmanakaya with the discarded maternal astral covering of the Nathanic Jesus. In other words, the maturing individuality of Jesus of Nazareth incorporated the Zarathustra I being, which was illumined and imbued with spirit by the rejuvenated Nirmanakaya of the Buddha. Thus the confluence of Buddhism and Zoroastrianism became a living reality in the soul of Jesus of Nazareth. Because the Nathanic Joseph also died relatively early, the Zarathustra child was truly orphaned. In spirit, he was the reincarnation of Zarathustra, not the person he was according to his physical lineage. According to his bodily line of descent, he was the son of the Nathanic Joseph, and to physical perception, that is who he was. Luke describes this situation exactly, and we must take his words literally. Quote, "Now, when all the people were baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized and was praying, the heaven was opened, and the Holy Spirit descended upon him in bodily form as a dove, and a voice came from heaven, 'Thou art my beloved Son, today I have begotten thee.'" Jesus, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age. Luke 3:21-23. In a subsequent verse, instead of simply stating that Jesus was the son of Joseph, the Gospel says, quote, "being the son as was supposed of Joseph," close quote, because essentially his I, which had originally incarnated in the Solomonic Jesus, had nothing to do with the Nathanic Joseph. The being of Jesus of Nazareth had already united the great and mighty inner forces of Buddhism and all the blessings of Zoroastrianism. His inwardness would later be called upon to fulfill a great and mighty destiny, very different from that of others baptized by John in the Jordan. As we will see later, this inwardness received the Christ at the baptism in the Jordan. At the same time, the immortal aspect of the birth mother of the Nathanic Jesus descended upon the mother whom the Nathanic Joseph had taken into his house and made her virginal again. Thus the soul of the mother he had lost was restored to Jesus during the baptism. His remaining mother sheltered the soul of his birth mother, the Mary, whom the Bible calls, quote, "blessed among women," close quote, Luke 1:28. End of the lecture. This is the end of Lecture 5, given in Basel on September 19, 1909.